A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Great to have you with us today. On the program, we are going to talk with Culpeper County, Virginia Sheriff Scott Jenkins about that vote on House Bill 961, Governor Ralph Northam's gun magazine suppressor ban. The sheriff was in the room, actually, when the Senate Judiciary Committee voted to pass that bill by for the session earlier this week. We'll talk about the fight over that bill and what happens next when we talk with the sheriff here in just a moment or two. Also, do want to let you know that coming up on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam and Company, we're going to be talking about the Democratic debate Wednesday evening in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's the first that Michael Bloomberg will be on the debate stage. It is expected that he will be the primary target of basically all of the other candidates because of the not only the surge in spending, but the on campaign ads and things of the like. But I don't know if you saw the story, Wall Street Journal reporting that Bloomberg is actually paying people $2,500 a month to basically be surrogates. They're supposed to use their social media to support him every day. Once a week, they're supposed to contact everybody in their contact list and tell them how great a guy Mike Bloomberg is. And in exchange, you get $2,500 a month. And that's, again, that's chump change for Michael Bloomberg. He could buy 200 million Americans. I'm sorry, not 200 million, 200,000. He could probably buy 200 million too, but he wouldn't need that many. 200,000-300,000 Americans, he could pay that from now through November, and he wouldn't even feel it. It'd be like you order an extra pepperoni on a pizza on Friday night. So we've been saying for some time here at Bearing Arms that there are billions of reasons to be concerned about a Mike Bloomberg candidacy. We will see on Wednesday evening him on stage for the first time. And I think that is probably going to be, honestly, that might be one of Mike Bloomberg's biggest liabilities. Because I just don't think he's that likable a guy. We'll see how that shakes out. Expect a full analysis and commentary on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Right now, let's get to our conversation with Culpeper County Sheriff Scott Jenkins. Take a look and a listen. Sheriff, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the program. And before we get started, thank you for all of your efforts over the past few months to really be an outspoken leader here in defense of our Second Amendment rights in Virginia.
Happy to do so. It's a privilege.
You were there on Monday morning when House Bill 961 was sent off to Virginia to the Virginia Crime Commission. It's done legislatively for the year. What was your first reaction? Did you have any idea that that was going to happen when you showed up in Richmond Monday morning?
I did not. It was a pleasant surprise, although I do wish that the bill had been completely killed. But for the moment, that's one battle won.
One battle won, absolutely. There are a number of other gun control bills that are still alive in the Virginia legislature right now. Do all of them concern you to one degree or another?
Most of them do. They were unnecessary bills, everything from the so-called red flag laws to the attack on so-called assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. None of them were necessary, and none of them will have the intended outcome that they claim that it will. I think yesterday was a good example, once again, of the sponsor of that bill, 961, Mr. Levine, when he stood up to once again give partially inaccurate information and a very poor explanation, once again, of how weapons function or what the dangers truly are. I've said before, he was as poorly prepared to present that bill as he was apparently in the writing of the bill. He is nothing more than Governor Northam's useful idiot.
Yeah, I mean, it really seemed like, and I don't know how useful he was, honestly, given the fate of the bill. But, it's interesting. I mean, it really seemed like they believed they could just get up there and yell weapons of war. And that was going to be enough to pass legislation that would have turned in the majority of Virginia gun owners into criminals overnight for simply keeping what they already own.
That's exactly right. And, in the talking I've had with the various people who of the liberal left supporters of the bill that would talk, their only reasoning they could give me for magazine restriction was that somehow they claim it allows for a person to approach a mass shooter in an incident when he's reloading magazines. It gives a pause for them to more quickly get to the shooter and attack and stop him from continuing carnage, which, you know, my question then was going to be, raise your hand if you've ever been shot at, because I know I have. And I don't know too many people that keep their head up and stare directly at a shooter the whole time he's emptying a magazine waiting for a pause. And to think that just because they have a magazine capacity of 10 or 12 or something, you know as well as I do if you understand firearms, taking three 10-round magazines into a school that's a no gun-free zone and shooting 30 people is not much difference in carrying two 15-round magazines. A mag change takes 2 to 3 seconds even for a person that's not very competent. And to think that Bill would have actually saved lives or done what they intended, it's absolute, it's a sad example of how easily people can be misled because they don't do their homework and actually learn, you know, the function of weapons and things that they're being told that these bills will protect. It's by people that are believing the lines that are being given to them by those people with an agenda, and they fall for it. And my hope is that as we go forward, you know, we've got a little reprieve, one battle won and others to fight. But I hope that, you know, in unison, law enforcement, the, you know, gun rights people and everyone will start to educate these poorly educated people on firearms that know very little. It's time to get rid of the ignorance and let them know, take them to the range, take them through firearm safety classes so that we remove some of that unknown and let them make more intelligent decisions when they write these bills, if that's still their intent.
I think that's absolutely crucial. I think you're so spot on when you talk about that and not just, you know, taking the lawmakers to the range, but getting that information before voters as well, because I think one of the things we saw in November is that anti-gun politicians like Michael Bloomberg took advantage of the lack of information that a lot of non-gun owners have when it comes to firearms. And they scared those voters. They made them believe that all you needed was a couple of quote unquote common sense measures and everything would be better. And then when these Democrats get elected, all of a sudden, you know, they start introducing legislation that's going to turn these folks' neighbors into felons. I don't think that's frankly what Virginia voters were asking for in November. And I suspect and hope that there's going to be a political backlash come 2021. But, you know, we saw the grassroots backlash, starting with the Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions that 91 out of 95 counties and including Culpeper County and dozens of other cities and towns and the tens of thousands of folks who were there on lobby day. You were there speaking. I was there speaking. We didn't have much of a chance to get a chance to talk because of the crowd there. But I was really inspired by what you had to say on lobby day. I got to ask you, what do you think happens to that energy and that movement that began there at the local level? What do you think happens to this, both statewide and in Culpeper County, now that House Bill 961 has been passed by for the year?
Well, anyone in the pro-Second Amendment movement would be foolish to think that they need to rest easy or in any way let up the momentum they've gained. They need to push harder than ever now. And as I said, start with education. Get rid of the ignorance and eliminate part of this ability they have to quickly get their agenda through with people who just don't know any better. You know, take the time, you know, in this break that we have in the months to come before they try to push through more insane legislation like this, take the time to truly get at the ground level with people that are fighting so hard against these gun rights and educate them first and foremost on what the Second Amendment is. If it's a pro-Second Amendment movement, then focus on that. Stop letting them shape the argument as they continuously get to do and say that it's for sports shooting, that it's for defense, home defense, or personal defense. That is not what that document was written for. The Second Amendment was clearly to stop a tyrannical government, and people don't want to talk about it because that's ugly or messy or not politically correct. But the fact is you need to focus on the true intent. Our founding fathers, when they put that in there, it was for the sole purpose, then and there, to use against a tyrannical government. And yes, that does mean violence. And no one wants to talk about that. No one's saying that we promote violence or want to get involved in violence today. No, it should be handled the way it has been handled here in Virginia, and it's commendable. That's the way it always should be handled. But our country was founded with those documents, and they should stand forever to protect all of the amendments, whether it's the, you know, first, second, or others. And without those weapons, without that ability to defend ourselves and defend those documents, then, you know, we're going to become like all the other countries down through history. And that's why America is what it is today, because of those, you know, thoughtful additions that they wrote out long ago. And it's up to us now, here and now, across the nation, to defend those rights and never back down. And we're at a good place right now of momentum building, but I can't stress enough. We need to educate people who are unknown of, you know, their knowledge of firearms. They have none, and they need to be educated by the pro-gun rights people, not the people that are trying to limit and take the guns away. Let them know what they really do, what they really function like, and the fact that, you know, evil will still exist. Even if you take away those certain firearms that they're trying to restrict, it's still going to happen. It doesn't matter whether you call it an assault weapon or what you label it as.
Absolutely. I want to touch on something that you mentioned here. You talk about the Second Amendment and what its purpose is for. And I can already hear your critics share. So, oh, my God, it says the Second Amendment is about violence. You know, if you go back and you read the Federalist Papers, I think it's Federalist 46. James Madison even talks about why we should not be so concerned about a huge overarching government, because we've got the people who are, you know, bearing arms. He said that's what makes the United States so different than these European countries, where the people weren't trusted with the right to keep and bear arms. And he said, so imagine if you did have some tyrannical federal government, what would happen? He talked about the armed populace siding with the state, siding with local governments, electing militia officers, not, you know, some random nut job deciding he's going to spark off a revolution. But I think the seed of what we saw in the Second Amendment sanctuary movement, that local involvement and that local engagement. And if the state government is infringing on our rights, well, we're going to turn to our local governments for help. If our federal government is infringing on our rights, we're going to turn to that state government for help. And that in case of emergency break glass moment of, you know, God forbid, if the government were to decide one day that it's going to treat its citizens as subjects. That's what the Second Amendment is there for. I agree with you. We're not there yet. Hopefully we will never get there. But the fact that we've got so many individuals around the country and you know, in Virginia, who are intent on turning this right into a privilege, is very, very concerning. And that hasn't gone away, even if House Bill 961 has gone away. Now, I did want to ask you, put the Constitution aside for a second. Was there any gun control proposal that Ralph Northam offered that you felt, you know what, if it weren't for the constitutional infringements, yeah, that'd be pretty useful? Or are these measures that are just aimed in the wrong direction? They're aimed at law-abiding gun owners when we should be focusing on violent criminals.
That's exactly right. You're right. No, there wasn't any proposal that I'd be in favor of the way that they submitted them. I can tell you, you'll find law enforcement in general will support gun rights. And the average, you know, local officer, trooper, others, you'll stop and ask their opinion will tell you, you know, we're not the ones backing these bills or encouraging them. We know. We respond to these calls. We're the tip of the spear when it comes to those mass shootings or any other gun violence incidents. We deal with it firsthand, and I can tell you, as just one of the thousands here in Virginia, we're not the ones clamoring and screaming we want this legislation. That's from that liberal left agenda that likes to label things and say that they have a solution and it's going to solve the problems, when in fact we know it's not. It's simply part of that overall agenda that they're starting by throwing everything they can against the wall to see what sticks. They're watering it down and trying to get whatever they can through this year in the hopes that they're going to continue down that road, that their ultimate goal is to register all weapons, know where they all are, and restrict until they remove them all. That's their ultimate goal, because their opinion is no one should have weapons but the military and police, and that is not what this nation was founded on, and it's not how we got here. That's, you know, the right of the people shall not be infringed, and I don't know what's so difficult to understand about that.
Yeah, well, they kind of tipped their hand with Senate Bill 16, right? A dropping that bill first and no grandfather clauses. Just if you keep your guns, you keep your magazines, you keep your suppressors, you're going to be a felon. And then they started, well, okay, maybe we'll take this out. Maybe we'll turn this into a misdemeanor. Look, you already told us what you want. You want to take our guns away. You want to take our magazines away. And you want us to be felons if we don't give them up. Again, I don't think that attitude is going to change between this year and next year. We are, I think, unfortunately going to see some of these bad bills become bad laws. I want to ask you something about the red flag law that I am anticipating in some form or fashion is probably going to get through. I've had conversations with my local county sheriff, and he's described right now what happens when you need to take somebody in for a mental health evaluation. And sometimes deputies are tied up on that case for hours and hours, maybe their entire shift and even some overtime, waiting for that individual to get treatment. It seems to me like we have a mental health crisis in this state that is not going to be addressed by a red flag law, because that's a gun control bill, not a mental health bill. And they're pushing these gun control measures at the expense of the real problems that they should be working on fixing. Do you think we have a mental health issue in the state of Virginia right now in terms of getting individuals in crisis the help that they actually need, as opposed to, well, we can try to take their guns away and that'll solve the problem?
Sheriffs have known for years, for decades, they've been whittling away, taking money away from the mental health care system. State facilities and others that would normally treat and house patients in the jails have become the basic dumping ground and revolving door for our mental health patients in our counties. And we've fought this for years, that there's not enough funding. And slowly in the last few years, we're starting to see the funding come back, and they're realizing the crisis they've created by their own hand. So, yes, we clearly know there's a mental health crisis and it needs to be addressed, just like with the gun lobby and what they're trying. You know, address the criminals, not the law-abiding. Mm-hmm. Focus some of these bills on true, hard-hitting sentences for criminals that do acts of violence with a firearm. You know, instead of taking that AR-15 away from these people who are law-abiding and not doing anything wrong, how about just writing a bill where you're going to give some minimum sentence of years and years in prison if you choose to use one of those weapons? But the fact is, they're criminals. They're committing crimes when they do it. No matter what bill you write, they're going to be doing the same thing. The law isn't going to stop those people from doing these things. And, you know, to say otherwise is just insanity. There's nothing to show from the Clinton-era gun ban to show that there was an improvement in the areas they thought there would be, and those failed, and the ones they've attempted now would fail. The red flag laws or even the universal background checks point to that. That is nothing more than a first step toward gun registration. That's just another way of getting around it, that, like these other bills, they're throwing everything they can, and they'll get little pieces, chip away a little at a time to get ultimately where their end game is. Because you can't tell me that if today they're restricting an AR-15 or a gun with a 15-round magazine that people carry every day for concealed carry and defense, that they won't soon come and take away the 6-shot revolver or other things later. Because you know as well as I do, understanding a firearm, you know, a gun-free zone is still a target-rich environment, and a person with a couple 6-shot revolvers and a few speed loaders can go create just as many bodies as they could with semi-automatics with a 10-round magazine if they understand the function of the weapon and have any degree of proficiency or practice with it at all. Gun-free zones are the problem in one way, as well as other people committing these crimes. Evil is going to exist no matter what. It's going to occur, whether it's with an assault weapon or another type of weapon, even using vehicles and other means. It's not going to solve the problem that they claim. It's just part of the liberal left agenda. And we saw in weeks past that group in Richmond, not all of them, there are some good people there that have been there for a long time and served honorably. But we got a new group there that is a completely different mindset. They are bought and paid for, and they are not going to bend whatsoever. And we didn't see them bend when it came to these bills. They were going to push it through come hell or high water, and they stuck to it. But it's up to us now, while there is some momentum, that we've woke up people on the gun rights side, the 2A movement, and it is time to not back down and continue pushing forward and get more and more people active than there ever have been.
Absolutely. Sheriff Scott Jenkins, thank you so much, sir, for your time. I really appreciate it, and hope we get a chance to talk again soon. All right, let's get to our good deed of the day, our armed citizen of the day, and sadly, our recidivist report, those stories from the criminal justice system involving individuals who should have been behind bars, but instead we're out in the streets. So we'll take you to Nashville, Tennessee today, where police say a man who was out on bond with a lengthy criminal history nearly beat his wife to death in front of their children over the outfit that she was planning on wearing to church. Yeah. Percy Thompson, age 34. According to ABC 7, repeatedly punched his wife until she was left unconscious. The attack came 6 days after domestic violence charges were dropped for previously beating his wife in December. Police say they got to the home north of Nashville, found the victim in a car with her mother watching over her, her entire upper body covered in blood. Victim's mother said that Thompson began yelling at his wife over what she wore to church. Said that he was screaming, cussing in front of everyone in the home, including the couple's children. Thompson, who is out of jail on bond and has a lengthy criminal history, yelled that his wife was, quote, not going to put him back in jail. He then left, but came back, forced his way inside the home, pushed her down the steps in the front of the home, repeatedly punched her in the face. After the victim was unconscious, he packed his car and then drove away. He was found at an apartment a few miles away. Not long later, he was charged with attempted criminal homicide, failure to appear, as well as driving on a revoked license, booked in the local county jail on $300,000 bond. Would love to know more about not just those charges that were dismissed back in December and why that was the case. Did it have anything to do with the victim, you know, not wanting to testify, but the lengthy criminal history that law enforcement describes, because I have a sneaking suspicion that this not the first go round with law enforcement. And chances are this guy, had he not gotten plea deal after plea deal, would have been behind bars instead of out on the streets. All right. Our armed citizen story of the day. Also from, well, no, I'm sorry. I say from Tennessee. It's not from Louisville, Kentucky. And two officers from the Elizabethtown, Kentucky Police Department who were off duty and on a date night at Raisin Cane's there in Louisville. I had somebody, I saw somebody online, by the way, saying, Raisin Cane's for a date night. Look, not all of us could afford five-star restaurants, but by the way, they didn't pay me like Michael Bloomberg's paying people, but Raisin Cane's, if you've never had it, really good chicken tenders. Really, really good. Anyway, so this couple, Chase McCown and Nicole McCown, were enjoying some chicken tenders at Raisin Cane's on February 15th when they saw a guy wearing a mask and a black hooded sweater come into the restaurant and walked up to the register, appeared to threaten staff with a gun. Now, Chase McCown is a detective. Nicole McCown is an officer with the Elizabethtown Police Department. They were armed, even though they were off duty. Nicole McCown said, this is where the repetitiveness and the training kicks in. They stood up from the back booth. They drew their firearms, running towards the suspect. That suspect, identified as a guy named Justin Carter, then runs out of the restaurant with the McCowns in pursuit. They chased him through downtown Louisville, according to NBC News, and arrested him with the help of local police officers. Chase McCown says, quote, in marriage, we've got each other. We're going to talk things out. We're going to deal with whatever comes at us. And they were able to prioritize that teamwork there on date night as well. So thankfully, those off-duty officers were there, armed citizens able to stop that armed robber. And our good deed of the day today from, I believe this is from South Carolina. Just make sure. Yes, Gallivant's Ferry, South Carolina, near the Little Petey River. It was over the weekend when a family's car actually went off a road into the Little Petey River. Thomas Fee was driving near Gallivant's Ferry. He noticed a vehicle was fishtailing because of the wet roads, and then he saw the SUV just disappear into the water. He said it jumped. He said, I saw its brake lights, and then it just disappeared into a huge splash of water. So he pulls over, two other good Samaritans, already out of their cars, helping these five individuals in this SUV escape before the SUV sank down into the river, which it did, unfortunately. Fee's son Lawrence said his father's actions were nothing short of heroic. He said, quote, he's always wanted to help people. He's always wanted to be there for people when they need someone most. Fee, meanwhile, says the two other men who helped did a lot more than he did, and he says that he is not a hero. Well, listen, I think everybody who stopped to make sure that that family was okay, y'all were in the right place at the right time, and you were willing and able to do the right thing. So whether or not you want to consider yourself a hero, I certainly thank you for your good deed. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Again, thank you for being a part of the program today. We will have complete analysis of Wednesday night's debate in Las Vegas on the next Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Hope you'll tune in for that. Don't forget, you can subscribe to this program at Town Hall Media on YouTube. Also, through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and the townhall.com podcast page. Does that sound right? I think it does. You can also become a VIP member of Bearing Arms at BearingArms.com. Get exclusive analysis, commentary, and more. And, of course, you can support the Second Amendment journalism that we do each and every day. We thank you for that support. And you can become a VIP member again at BearingArms.com. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow with another brand new edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.